Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Steven, how are you doing? We're back for another episode.
So, Ed, I have to tell you, we don't often talk about the time and date and that we're recording, but today, the 5th of July, Britain has woken up to a new government. There's grey skies and rain outside, but metaphorically, the sun is shining and I'm feeling a lot better than I felt for a while. So I had to get that in. I'm sorry for our international listeners, but even you will appreciate a new government in Britain. It's a big deal. So I'm feeling pretty good today.
Very nice. Well, you know what I do? I'm obviously not a British citizen, but there is one thing that I do quite appreciate about the British electoral system, and that's the speed of the transition. It's so cool how, like, you have the vote yesterday, and then today the new government is in place, instead of taking months and months of kind of coalition forming or some sort of lame duck period. Yeah. I think that's great.
I mean, as we speak, you know, one prime minister has announced that he's lost. He's graciously handed over. He's been to see the monarch. The next prime minister has been invited to form a government and has done that and has stood and given his first speech. And all that's happened within sort of 18 hours of the polls closing. It's pretty great. And we didn't have any riots. Nobody stormed the Houses of Parliament or anything. And we just get on with it. Sort of democracy. It's this thing called democracy that's, even if it's flawed, it seems to be quite good. Anyway.
Well, Stephen, we could have some questions about the democratic appeal of the British system with the does the outcome truly reflect the will of the people or with the first past the post system? But that's a topic for a different podcast, I guess.
And also, I think there are going to be some pretty red election maps coming out of all different sorts. And I'm sure Ken Field is busy crunching the data to produce several different maps to show the electoral results, all of which will be interesting,
This is a continual problem. This is a huge problem with this, the electoral maps and using territory to represent proportion. And actually, just recently in Europe, we had the European Parliament vote. And it's a really a big problem because in Germany, the right-wing party, the AfD, did well in certain regions. In many regions, they were the largest party. But you have these maps that show it as if they won. And the reality is they were getting like 30% or high 20%. So they were, of course, the strongest party. But we do not have a first-past-the-post system. So the map absolutely distorts the outcome. Yeah, it's really egregious by the media to use these types of maps.
After the last election in the States, one that you follow quite closely, I imagine, still. Ken made a map where there was a point for every voter on the map. And they were, so if there are 20 million voters in a state, those 20 million points are distributed.
Oh, I remember this map. Yeah, I remember this.
Right. And then they're coloured red or blue, depending on how you go. And because of that, you sort of see everything went a bit purple, inevitably, because there are Republican and Democrat voters. But it was a good way. And the fact that there was a point for every vote, or so he said, I believe him, that's quite a cool way of doing it.
Yeah, this could be a good topic for us in the coming months as we draw closer to the U.S. election, of course. But anyway, let's move on to important news, Stephen, instead of trivia like politics. We have GeoMob events to recap.
We have lots of GeoMob events.
It has actually been, I was talking with someone about this. I think the last 10 days may have been the busiest stretch GeoMob has ever had, in that we had three events, unfortunately only two of which I was able to attend. I was not able to go to Edinburgh in late June, but by all accounts, it was a great event. Three very good talks. One of which I would have particularly, well, I would have liked to have seen all of them, but the one of them that sounds very cool was by Stephen Kay. And basically he is about strip maps, orthogonal strips maps. So, you know, like the one dimensional map type thing where it's from the perspective of going down a street or whatever. And apparently he's built some software to try to algorithmically generate these from OpenStreetMap data, I believe. And the pictures looked really quite cool. So that was an interesting talk.
And Chris Fleming was talking about 20 years of OpenStreetMap.
Yes, we are. We are now fully into the OpenStreetMap 20th anniversary celebration. By the way, dear listeners, I guess we should say we of course at our next London event we're going to focus fully on OpenStreetMap, which is September 18th. However, there's also going to be a pub meetup in London, I believe on August 10th.
Something like that.
Something like that. But you should check on the OSM London Mastodon feed or on their wiki page or whatever, and they have the details. So for anyone who's listening and wants to join in, you should go do that.
Are we going to get a visit from Steve Coast, do you think?
Steve Coast, I guess, is going to be there. Yeah, I don't know. He put out the announcement, so I've not communicated with him about it. Anyway, by all accounts, Edinburgh was a raging success. It was the second event; it was very well attended. The third event is coming up in the autumn, and that one I'm really trying to get to. So we'll see.
I mean, I just think it's fantastic that you know we've now got all these different cities all over Europe hosting GeoMobs. You know, and they just keep adding because after Edinburgh. You popped up in, how'd you say it, Leuven?
Leuven, yes. So I took the train to Leuven. It was fantastic. I mean, first of all, Leuven is a very, very interesting, nice little city. It's about 30 minutes outside of Brussels. It's kind of the, I guess, the Belgian equivalent of like Oxford or Cambridge. It's a university town. Very old, traditional university. Very beautiful architecture. Very nice pedestrian area. In the center of town, and so the event was actually at the university. Two great organizers, local organizers. I need to give full credit to Han and Ben who took the lead on organizing everything. And yeah, this was the first GeoMob Belgium. So, you know, a lot of people were there. There were like 30 people, which I thought was a very good turnout for our first event. And we got right into it. We had four talks. One of the speakers, I was one of the speakers. I just gave a talk kind of about what GeoMob is and what you know, the sort of the traditions of GeoMob and how it came about, and I had lots of pictures of different GeoMob events and some of the weird and wacky talks. But with the context of kind of explaining what has worked for us in various cities in London and then elsewhere, but in the context that, of course, they should do whatever works for Belgium. So after that, we had several good talks. We had the first up, we had a guy, Dries, who this guy gave an overview of the use of drones in agriculture. So like mapping of the fields, you know, and that's something we've had that a couple times in London. But it was interesting because he gave I guess he's been working in this space for almost 20 years, and he talked about, you know, how the drones have gotten smaller and the cameras have gotten better, but also the algorithms for interpreting the images have gotten much better. Stephen, it was amazing at one point. So at one point he shows a picture of a farm, of a field of wheat, and you know, and he's like, oh, of course we can make a fairly accurate estimate of what the wheat yield would be, you know, and it starts zooming in, and you think it's going to be some sort of algorithm that estimates, takes a picture and then uses that to estimate the wheat yield. No, the camera can zoom in. They can count every single stalk of wheat.
Wow.
It's unbelievable, Stephen. Unbelievable. It was really phenomenal. It was really, I mean, the image recognition would pick every little, the grains, the individual, I mean, it was insane. It was insane.
They can, the technology now is such that they can look at the condition of every plant and they can even water and...
Sure, how much fertilizer, how much water, everything. Yeah, I mean, it was really phenomenal. Actually, afterwards we were at the pub and we were talking about it, and one of the biggest barriers to the business is the technology has moved way into the realm of science fiction in the sense that, like, and the actual customers, the farmers, can't even conceive of what is possible, right? So there's a big kind of educational component of just making people aware of what is even conceivable. So that was very interesting.
Cool.
Then the next talk, this one I thought was great. So Leonardo, he would eventually go on to win the Best Speaker Prize, although it was very close, I have to say. And this talk, so I guess in Belgium, they have it's kind of like a recommendation. It's not or let's say it's a goal. But the goal is that everyone, you know, to have greener cities and have more trees, you know, to deal with climate change, but also to deal with mental health and things. And so, you know, he showed there are all these studies that it's very good that, you know, if you live in a totally urbanized area and there's no access to green space, very bad for you, both in terms of your mental health and your activity level. So the goal is that from every residence, you should be able to see three trees. 30% of cities should be 30% of should be covered by tree cover of the land, and every property should be within 300 meters of a true park or a forest or something like that. So it's the 30-30-300 rule.
Nice.
And so then they produce all these maps to try to figure out which, you know, how close are you to complying with these rules or not? Like, which houses are too far away from a park, but down to all the way, Stephen, too. From this property, can you see three trees or not?
I'm just looking out the window as you're saying this, and...
How many trees can you see, Stephen?
Actually, from where I'm sitting, I can only see one.
Well, this might explain some of your problems, Stephen. Some of the yeah.
Yeah, it might. But I have got the 300 rule.
Wow.
So I've got a third of the three, and I've got the 300, and I've got no idea about the 30.
The 30, well. Anyway, it was very interesting, and he had very nice maps that they had made up to do this. And then our final talk was an OpenStreetMap talk from a guy named Julian, who he's one of these guys who's very active in the railroad mapping, railway mapping. So mapping of the stations, but now not just like, of course, where's the station and where is track one and where's track two, but all the kinds of accessibility details. So for example, he showed an example of an app that they've been working on that is railroad routing, but like train travel routing, but if you're taking a bike with you.
Right.
Okay. So you need to know, like, oh, will I have to carry it up or down the stairs, or is there an elevator, or is there a ramp that I can take the bike, you know, down and up and things like that. And of course, all the things like, you know, on this track, you know, are the doors even with the track, or do I have to lift the bike up a couple stairs and things like that? So, I mean, super meticulous mapping. And he showed lots of examples of where this has been done well and some of the applications that can be built with that, but then also, you know, where it still needs to be improved and things. So, Belgium has a very, there were several people, several attendees from the very active Belgian OpenStreetMap community. So, yeah, and then we went and had some Belgian beer, which there's been no quality drop off there. It's it remains.
I was about to say, this has got, yeah, if you were planning your GeoMob tourism itinerary, a trip to a GeoMob in Belgium with the beer that you'd get there must be high up your list.
I can recommend it to everyone. I was the everyone was very friendly, and everyone was very excited that GeoMob was getting going, and very good, very positive feedback. And so, full credit to the local organizers, the local sponsors, and they said that they're planning another event towards the end of the year, maybe in November or so.
Fantastic, fantastic. And then the biggest GeoMob ever.
Right. So the next morning.
Or is it the biggest ever?
I got on the train and headed to London. I took the Eurostar to London, and just in time for GMA up London. We were back at Geovation, which is, of course, always great. And, so this was part of London Data Week, which is now in its second year. And I think it seems to be gaining a bit of momentum. I think they have a lot more events than they had last year. So lots of new faces as a result. Some people from London Data Week. Of course, lots of old faces as well. Lots of old-timers. In total, I mean, it must have been well over 100 people that were there. And we had 5 good talks, obviously, because it was London Data Week. We tried to have kind of a data focus to the talks. We had several talks kind of from the academic community.
Right.
So the first talk was very, very much in that vein from a woman, Mira Zhang. She is a researcher at University of Bristol in their geography department, and basically about, you know, when can you use traditional statistical modeling and analysis methods in a spatial context and when not. So this kind of really got into the theoretical. Interesting. Then we had Mark Wells from Esri. This was an interesting talk, although with the one caveat that it was, this is a topic, actually we may have to get him on the podcast because it was about the ethics of using location data. And obviously you could speak much longer than 15 minutes about that. But he had some interesting examples, of course, where, on the one hand, we have this tool that is, we have an immensely powerful tool that we can track things all the time. And so that power can either be used for good or it can be used for bad. And he had examples of both. So that was very interesting. But we need to go deeper on that, I think. The next talk was a dual talk from a woman named Lauren Wool and Paul Hodgson. And they have created a thing working for the City of London, or it's not the City of London because the City of London is a place, but the London local government about, so it's a high street data service. So basically, this I find quite interesting. They aggregate a bunch of data from various sources, commercial sources. So for example, from like BT and, mobile data, all kinds of data, transaction data. And so they aggregate that from different sources, fully anonymized, clean it up, and then they provide that data to the councils and things like that, with the particular emphasis on, understanding how behavior is changing, for example, with things like COVID, with things like low traffic neighborhoods, and trying to make an assessment. It's very interesting because some of these topics, like a low traffic neighborhood, it's so contentious. And there's so many anecdotes of people are like, oh my God, this makes my neighborhood so much better. And then the other person's like, oh my God, this is terrible. The stores are going to go bankrupt. And the great thing here is they actually have the data and they can actually show, was there a drop in consumer spending or not? Was there a drop in foot traffic or not? And, and so that was a very good talk. They had things like COVID and the back to work. Are people working remotely? Are people not? So that was very good.
Okay, I mean, that's been a holy grail for ages, trying to get reliable, widespread data about footfall and movement in cities and pedestrian stuff. Without it becoming too intrusive. So that does sound good. And can we get hold of that data?
You can. There was I think you need to become a customer, though, because which I think you need to join this group. It was my understanding, because obviously they have costs to produce the data, to clean it up, aggregate it, to anonymize it. The project has been going for a couple of years now, so I'm not sure what the end goal is, whether it will become made public in some way or if it's... I mean, I don't think it's operated on a for-profit basis, but it's just more to cover the costs. So, right. So, two more talks we had. We had James from SatView. This was very interesting because so SatView they produce thermal imaging, so basically satellite images that show heat. And he basically took us through like the whole history of that, of like what has been possible, what is possible, what are the challenges. It's very challenging, but it's actually, it's pretty amazing how much he showed pictures, you know, showing how it had evolved over the last 2-3 decades and how much better the imaging is there. So very cool, very, very good images, nice images, but very, very interesting also just to see. And then our final talk was again a dual talk. We had two researchers from the Queen Mary University in London, and they. So you may recall, Stephen, a couple years ago, maybe 18 months ago, Ollie O'Brien presented about all the docs.
The geekiest thing we've seen for ages.
Yes, where they kind of had this race where they different teams rode around on the Boris bikes to dock the.
Don't call them Boris bikes anymore.
I still call them Boris bikes. Come on, I mean. Anyway, they not only were they racing around, but apparently I hadn't realized this, but they were actually gathering a lot of data while they do that. You know, because wearing cameras on their head and things. And so what these two have done is take that data. Take the GPS traces and the, you know, they have like an accelerometer and things like that, but then also the images. And basically then you kind of have images of almost all of central London, right? And they try to, from a cyclist's perspective. And so they've tried to boil that down and to create a kind of a cyclist safety data set that would be available to anyone and to other researchers and things where you can basically try to establish some sort of methodology, like is an area good for cycling or not?
Right.
And it looks at all kinds of different factors, like, you know, how fast the person's able to ride, what kind of separation there is from traffic, the state of the road. I mean, there are different classification systems for how smooth an asphalt path is and that. So that was quite interesting. I mean, what I thought was interesting there was that they had, from this one project, which was already a very cool project, now they've, you know, been able to extract a lot more data.
That's smart.
Yeah, they did talk about some of the challenges, though, because it turns out just having a kind of helmet-mounted camera as your creates some challenges, because if the person, you know, moves their head left and right as they're riding around, that creates kind of false acceleration readings and things, and... So it was interesting.
Cool. I mean, that's just an amazing selection of speakers in Edinburgh, Leuven, and London.
It was a pretty diverse sampling of topics, yeah, I have to say.
And then you went to the pub, of course.
Then we had to go to discuss at the pub. But first, we had to vote for the Splash Map speaker. But the interesting thing there, Stephen, is for the first time in London, we used the new voting methodology with the feature upvote. And it worked great.
Yeah.
So that's what we'll be doing going forward. Big thanks to Feature Upvote for making that available to us. And the winners were Lauren and Paul with their High Street Data Service talk. And then we went to the pub. I don't know if you saw the picture, but huge crowd at the pub. Probably the biggest we've had yet.
The biggest bar bill we've had yet.
Actually, shockingly, no.
Well, I wasn't there, which must have helped.
It was not a small bar bill, but it was not the biggest we've had yet. But right. It was great discussions. I mean, yeah. Really, really. You know, obviously in the summer, especially, you know, because it's so light out and everyone's hanging out and everyone's in a good mood and it's just you know, a good vibe. So great. Lots of interesting conversations, and I had a lot of fun.
Good. So, and we've launched Geomob on LinkedIn, haven't we?
Yes, that's the other big news, Stephen. The sad reality is, Stephen, is that while you and I love Mastodon, not everyone has made the transition to Mastodon. And so we thought LinkedIn would be another channel that would give people, you know, a way to stay connected and up to date. And the reality is almost 100% of our audience, you know, of adult professionals are on LinkedIn. So, while we will continue, of course, going with Mastodon because, frankly, it's a lot of fun, but, we will also be posting on LinkedIn. So people can follow Geomob on LinkedIn and get all the updates and see the pictures and things like that. It's not going to be high volume. It's going to be whenever we have an event or when we, you know, once a week we put out the podcast or whatever, but, you know, so that way you can make sure you don't miss an event. And also you can see what happens in the other cities and things like that.
Yeah, it's a useful platform. There's, you know, if you just want to have fun, Mastodon is great. But, you know, if you're trying to reach a professional audience, I think LinkedIn is a good place to be working. I will see. Yeah. I mean, I like, I'm looking at the event pages on the Geomob website at the moment, and I don't know whether we've always had the summary threads embedded on the website and I've just not noticed it, but it looks really cool at the moment. So,
Yeah, we have, we have three events coming up. We're going to take a summer break. Frankly, I need a bit of a break because we've had a lot of events in the last, last 6 weeks, we've had four events or five events, actually. So nothing until September, but then we're going to be back in London for the OpenStreetMap event. Then we got Edinburgh. We've also set the date for the next Berlin event. It's going to be in October. And I'm hopeful soon that we'll get the next Barcelona event on the calendar. And so, yeah.
And our friends in Finland and our friends in Belgium are going to have another event probably before the end of the year.
Probably. I expect the team in Finland will probably do something as well. So, anyway, watch this space.
Yeah. There's nobody in... Anyone in Madrid? I can't remember.
I'm sorry, what?
We haven't had an event in Madrid, have we, or...
I'm sorry, Stephen,
Madrid,
I don't, you know, I mean, the thing with Madrid is someone local has to organize it.
Yeah.
So if someone locally wants to organize, I do know some people, we have had some folks from Madrid come to the Barcelona event, but, you know, someone needs to take the lead. I suspect there may be some sort of geospatial event in Madrid, but probably in Spanish. So maybe I'm just not aware of that. But
so was the Belgian event in English?
Yes, it was in English. As I'm sure you're aware, Belgium is a multilingual country. So while we were in the Flemish region of Belgium, one of the speakers was from the Netherlands, and one of the speakers was from the French speaking region.
Right.
So,
cool.
I mean, you know, local community should do whatever they want, whatever works for them. It's not that people have to meet in English. It's interesting because in Berlin, all tech events are in English because it's so international. In Barcelona, there are sometimes events in Spanish. Some are in English, but you know, people should do whatever they want to do. I mean, I don't. It's not.
So, little bit of news. What's been going on with OpenCage? Anything on OpenCage?
Nothing too dramatic because we're well into the summer holiday period here. So I guess the big news is I'm going to be in Berlin all summer. So if anyone wants to talk geocoding in Berlin, hit me up. That being said, Stephen, I'm going to be working 9 to 5. I'm definitely taking some time off. So
well deserved, I'm sure.
And as is the rest of the team. So we're kind of in the slow period now with of the summer, but so no big product news in the near
future. So that means a billion geocodes a month or something. Is it a billion geocodes a month?
It's a billion. We're over a billion geocodes a month. Yeah.
And that just goes on.
The good thing is, Stephen, the computer is not going on holiday.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. You guys go on holiday. You both go off doing your things and spending time with family. And those machines just keep churning away those geocodes.
Yeah, don't tell the servers that we're on break.
And unlike artificial intelligence, the OpenCage servers give you the right geocode every time, or almost every time. Imagine if you had AI on your geocoder and you started getting...
You know, I saw a very good description about this. I have a friend who I went to dinner with recently, and he works in online security. He works for a company. They build kind of authentication systems and things. So they're basically a hardcore security guy, you know. And I hadn't seen him in a while, and I'm like, how are you using AI much? And what do you think about the whole AI thing? And he's like, well, it turns out when it comes to security, people want deterministic solutions, not probabilistic solutions. and you know, geocoding is kind of like that as well.
I agree.
That people kind of want the correct answer, not the thing that looks like it might be a correct answer.
I don't want to go into my rant about AI, but the confidence with it which it gets things wrong is truly alarming to me.
That's the problem. Yeah.
But I did... Our friends at Google, and I'm not holding them up as the punching bag for this, but our friends at Google announced that, let me just call this up so that I can tell you exactly what they announced. Their emissions climbed by nearly 50% in the 5 years up to, I guess now, due to AI energy demand.
Are we sure that's just because of AI, or it's just more use of cloud servers in general? But
they released that their greenhouse emissions have climbed by 48% over the past 5 years. It's primarily electricity supply to their data centers, and they sort of hint that it's AI. I don't want to have a go at Google, because I think all of the big players in AI must be experiencing the same sort of thing. You know, if it's Microsoft, if it's OpenAI, you know, whoever it is, Anthropic. It's just staggering the energy demand that we just ignore completely when we're consuming these services. You know, every time you type a prompt into one of these things, the planet burns a little bit more.
Well, is that necessarily the case? I mean, so...
Yes, it is the case.
It's dramatic, but my point is, for example, our servers, we host with the company called Hetzner, and all of the Hetzner servers are powered by renewable energy. So you know, if we use another server, obviously that consumes some resources or whatever to create the server, but the actual electricity, and I know Google in particular has been working very hard at this type of thing of getting carbon neutral in terms of, you know, generating the electricity in renewable ways, but it is concerning, of course. I mean, this of course follows on from blockchain, where to buy something for $5, you just destroyed like $100 of rainforest or something for the computation for it to solve the Sudoku or whatever that was required.
Apparently, the International Energy Agency, now I'm on this run, estimates that data centers' electrical consumption will double between 2022 and 2026.
I'm sure that's true, because more and more things are digitized, of course.
And 4.5% of the world's energy in 2030 will be consumed by AI.
Yeah, so, but the issue is, how do we make that energy in a sustainable way, right? I don't think we're going to use less electricity. The question is, how can we generate the electricity sustainably? That's the only real option I see. That being said, I have heard that obviously the big companies are aware of this problem and are working on trying to make things more efficient. So, one thing, Stephen, about this whole AI thing, I mean, I guess it's probably a separate discussion, but I mean, frankly, I don't stay on top of it, because it's just an avalanche of news. Every day there's a new update of, this new feature and this new model and whatever. But I have seen some talk that, now they've made some breakthroughs that now, instead of, there are these open source models that you can run locally yourself that seem to be nearly as good as the ones in the cloud that are run by the big companies, right? So as a way to avoid sharing the data, but hopefully also as a way to become, more efficient. So I don't know how you benchmark that type of thing, but I mean, this would be the one thing that would give me reason to pause when all these people are like, OpenAI is going to run the world or whatever. But, imagine in a year someone produces some model that you can run on your phone that's as good as ChatGPT. I don't, in which case you don't, it seems like there's a lot of innovation happening here.
Okay. So, I think we need to get somebody on the podcast to talk to us about geospatial AI.
Probably a good, that we should do that. We should find a guest who can educate us a bit more.
Yeah. Then we won't just babble on insanely about this stuff.
I make no promises, Stephen. I might just babble on, but,
knowing nothing is no reason not to have an opinion.
Anyway.
Which brings us back to the fact that we've just had an election, but never mind.
Right.
Ed, it's been fun.
It's time for summer break, Stephen.
It is.
I wish you and all of our listeners a very enjoyable summer. So obviously we'll still be here on the podcast every week.
Yeah,
but
we'll be here. Yeah. So. Take care.
Good talking to you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. While you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. Hope to see you at an event soon.